Well, good morning or good afternoon, everyone. This is Barb Pellow, Group Director from InfoTrends, and I'm delighted to be moderating your webinar today titled Emerging Technologies, Driving New Business Opportunities. You know, the proliferation of emerging technologies has really dictated the rebirth of the printing industry. The printer's role prior to this digital era was to put ink on paper. But the printing companies that are successful today are the ones who realize that their role is to keep an eye on technological breakthroughs and then evaluate specifically how they apply to their customer base. Today, you're going to be hearing from two practitioners, Skip Delvaglio and Scott Capel. And Skip is from Rollins Printing and Publishing, and Scott's from Sorrento Mesa Printing. And they're going to share with you how they're evolving their business models. But before we get started, what I would like to do is give you some tips for successful participation in today's webinar. First of all, if you're having any technical difficulties whatsoever, just let us know by using the Q&A button or troubleshoot by clicking the help widget below. If you've got a question for today's speakers, and we'll be taking them throughout the webinar, what I'd like you to do is just submit them via the Q&A button, and we'll respond to them as soon as they come in or as rapidly as we can, and anything we miss while the speakers are talking will hold until the end. And then if you want to see what the console can do, just click on the Tips for Attendees widget, and you'll get a complete rundown. Now, with that as a backdrop, what I'm going to do is I'm going to spend a few minutes talking, especially in light of everything that's gone on with Drupa in the last few weeks, a little bit about emerging technology. Then I'm going to turn over to Skip, and Skip's going to start telling you about the evolution of his business, and Scott's going to talk a little bit more about some of the more advanced technologies that they've implemented. Now, I think a lot of us have read the book, A Blue Ocean Strategy. And what authors Chan Kim and Renee Mavorgny said was that companies need to break out of the red ocean of bloody competition by working to create an uncontested market space that really makes the competition irrelevant. And if you're a company that's going to compete in the blue ocean, what you really are doing is looking for mechanisms to create market opportunities for you. Now, there are two primary principles. The first one is that it's about technology and innovation. Believe it or not, in today's market, what practitioners say is that the underlying technologies are typically already in existence, and that blue ocean company differentiates themselves by linking technology to things that buyers value. The other piece that's important is that there's not a need to venture out into distant waters to create a blue ocean. Typically, when people execute a blue ocean strategy, they're formed within their core businesses. And that the best opportunities are typically found in adjacent markets rather than distant waters. Now, when you look at it, what you've got to sort through is value innovation. And what value innovation is it's really that cornerstone of a blue ocean strategy. And it's created by a series of strategic moves resulting in a product or service that's substantially different from other people's products or services. And basically what you've got is two things that need to come together. The first one is you can do things that will lower your cost to the producer of that product or service, and that results in the capability to offer a high-value product or a service that hasn't been seen before at a reasonable price to the buyer. The other piece is you've got to do a great job at delivering buyer value. And what that means is you've got to have a leap in value that attracts buyers that may have never before considering buying that product or service. Now, when you look at it, this is the difference between a red ocean and a blue ocean strategy. A person that's in the red ocean is competing in an existing market. They're trying to cut costs to beat competition. They exploit existing demand. They make the value cost trade-off. And what they're doing is they're aligning the whole system of the firm's activities with a strategic choice of either differentiation or low cost. That company that's in the blue ocean is a company that creates an uncontested market space. They basically deliver a services portfolio that makes competition irrelevant, and they're creating new demand, and they're breaking that value cost trade-off. I like to give people some examples of companies that are everyday companies that they've thought about and that are really in what I categorize as a blue ocean. How many of you have been to IKEA? IKEA has redefined the whole furniture shopping experience and created what I categorize as a blue ocean in furniture. I tell folks, think about Southwest Airlines. What Southwest Airlines did is they built a blue ocean strategy when they got started, because what they were doing is not trying to compete against other airlines, but trying to compete against the drive between two cities that was a relatively short-haul flight. And then I tell folks, yellowtail wine, which a lot of us drink, by the way, was designed for people that didn't like wine. And when they found out that some of the wines were too bitter for wine drinkers that really didn't appreciate wine, yellowtail came to fruition as a middle tier that appealed to somebody who didn't necessarily like sweet wine but didn't like that wine that was too dry. Now, given all that, we're in a fundamental state of transition in the market. First of all, you've got consumers who are changing their behaviors relative to media consumption. There's a greater need for interactive print, where you blend mobile, social, print, and online. And companies want to communicate more directly and effectively. What does that lead to? A need for personalized print and integrated communication. And then there are other buyers that are looking for mechanisms like on-demand print to squeeze costs out of the supply chain. And so my message for everybody is you've got to look to the adjacencies for your current businesses. Digital print, if I'm strictly in the offset market, it becomes an adjacency to that traditional offset with electrophotographic or inkjet. You've got to look at new application areas. It might be books on demand, photo merchandise, or packaging. And then you've got to look at things like customized communication and supply chain optimization for marketing materials. All of those are natural adjacencies, depending upon, again, your current business model. Now, there's a couple things that we're also seeing that are driving this market toward digital. First of all, run lengths are dropping, and they're dropping significantly. This chart depicts the speed at which run lengths are deteriorating. And what you're seeing is the biggest growth, believe it or not, are in those applications where they're actually asking for run lengths of less than 500. You're also seeing, by the way, the fact that, you know, the demand in terms of shorter or longer run lengths is decreasing. So shorter runs increasing, longer runs decreasing. Now, what that links to is obviously an investment in digital color. And what we're seeing is placements are growing in terms of digital devices. We're also seeing substantial growth in short-run digital color in terms of overall market opportunity. So it says, A, I've got run lengths going down. B, what's that doing? It's driving me to more digital color. Now, another thing that we've all heard a lot about in the last several weeks is that the Drupa event that's taking place now is the inkjet Drupa. And the message inside of all of this is that we're going to see substantial growth, by the way, at the expense of traditional offsets in digital color. It'll be both inkjet and electrophotographic in terms of opportunities for growth with digital color, coming, again, at the expense of offsets. Another natural adjacency that we're seeing in the marketplace is this whole concept of large format. And in fact, projections are that the compound annual growth rate for large format will be 16.4%. Again, largely driven by digital devices. And it's a logical transition when you're controlling all of people's digital assets to not only print them in promotional materials, but also drive that into a large format type application for signage, point of purchase, etc. Now, the next thing we want to take a quick look at is that whole application view. InfoTrends studies growth in specific applications. This list depicts the top 10 fastest growing digital print applications in the U.S. And what you're seeing is significant growth in books, promotional materials, and direct mail. And I want to spend just a second on each of these. I tell folks, think about books. With devices like the iPad, publishers are panicked about not creating inventory that's going to obsolete. And so what are they doing? They're moving those books to digital. We're also seeing the concept of custom books and self-publishing grow where it's outpaced non-traditional titles substantially. And in fact, it grew at 169% to 2.7 million new titles that were non-traditional self-published. We're seeing customized books like children's books designed specifically so that your child could read a book and it's embedded in it is a photo of that young boy or girl. And we're seeing people blend personal, professional, and pertinent content into books to make them more meaningful. And then think about the photo book market. I look at the emergence of smartphones, and by the way, smartphones that have cameras that are growing by leaps and bounds. What that means is that every time a digital camera or mobile phone is sold, the opportunity expands. And so what we're seeing is huge growth in photo publishing merchandise. This is a market that 5 years ago really didn't exist. And it's got untapped potential, limited only by innovation. And then there's packaging. And while packaging is the essence of the brand, it's even more. It's a protected container, a dispensing mechanism, a tracking and tracing tool, a security agent. It's also a major growth opportunity for digital print. And what we've done is we've looked at the world value of print from digital color labels and packaging, and what you're seeing is it's a market that's going to grow at double digits for the next several years, and our projections are that it'll grow at a 13.5% compound annual growth rate between now and 2015. And then the next critical area is that whole concept of cross-media and multi-channel communications. Now, you're going to hear from Skip in a few minutes, but it starts, and you've got to look at how to start your business model with personalization. And what we're seeing are that marketers, and we surveyed more than 500 marketers, get the fact that they need to personalize communication for differentiation. And in fact, what they told us is that more than 60% of the campaigns they run today are either personalized one-to-one or they're segmented one-to-few. But those media types need to work together. And what we're finding is that that marketer actually, in any campaign, uses a mean number of channels of 3. And another critical area out there for growth is this whole concept of managing the marketing supply chain. Now, that's the way that people need to redefine web to print. You're not doing web to print, but what you are doing is optimizing the marketing supply chain for your customers. And that marketing supply chain is that chain of suppliers that an organization relies on to produce marketing materials. Oh, by the way, that's print, promotional products, point of sale to market their products and services. And what they've discovered is that that marketing supply chain is, in fact, in a state of chaos. There are numerous partners, brand managers, agencies, direct sales teams, buyers, printers, fulfillment houses that are all involved at some level in this supply chain. And what's happened is this chaos and siloed ordering of materials has caused substantial waste in terms of marketing and control of marketing materials. It also turns out that marketers are, in fact, investing billions of dollars producing, warehousing, and shipping marketing literature, packaging, documentation, point-of-sales displays, premium giveaways, signage and handouts for all channels of marketing contact. And, in fact, marketers surveyed said that they spent between 20 and 30% of their budget on marketing materials. But what they've also told us is that in many instances, up to 70% of that can actually obsolete on a warehouse shelf, in a drawer in a salesman's office, And so that's caused substantial waste in the overall marketing value chain. Now, with that as a backdrop, what I've tried to do is explain that there's a lot of opportunity in the printing market, opportunity that yields double-digit growth. You have to start somewhere. And so what I'm going to do is turn it over to Skip, and Skip's going to share with you how he's starting his journey in terms of emerging technologies. And so with that, Skip, take it away.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the webinar. Rollins Printing and Publishing Incorporated is a small commercial printer in Waterbury, Connecticut. In 1980, as communication consultants in our cellar in Stamford, Connecticut, because we had no garage that could facilitate what we wanted to do. So what we did was moved some equipment into the cellar in 1980 and worked on that for quite some time, and then we developed into a company in Thomaston, Connecticut, and then had an opportunity to acquire Rollins, which was basically a black and white copy shop. So what in effect happened was we took the black and white copy shop customer base, very loyal customer base, by the way, that Rollins had developed since 1971 on the same street in Waterbury, and leveraged that, bringing our color, mailing, inserting, addressing equipment right down to Rollins when we acquired it in 05. And then it's right across the street from the major Waterbury business mail entry post office. So that gave us an opportunity to get materials that we're going to print anyway from customers and add value to that for inserting, printing, and labeling and mailing. In addition, we started looking at and using, even prior to that, mail merge technology, just using basically simple Microsoft technology and using that to add value to appeal mailings and personalization of sell sheets. We upgraded our technology to include the Konica Minolta BizHub Press 8000 and the Zante Digital Production Press for full-color envelope printing. We also do truck and car magnets and graphics, and we do transfers for shirts, T-shirts, and that sort of thing. But Rollins is basically a full-service printer, and what we've done is focused on that as an opportunity to move forward with very high-end personalization of printed and mailing material. Now, we're doing that by focusing on Fusion Pro, which is a low-end entry-level product into the variable data printing venue. So we're working with our customer base to show them how to add value to their pieces as they send them out. We print them, mail them, but we add the value by looking at how to personalize it to each individual person. So that requires getting the database in very good shape so that we can actually send materials to individual people with items of interest to them specifically throughout the entire mailing process. So in effect, we're doing that and having some fairly decent success with it. It's a good way to get started. Like I say, we started with Microsoft Word very simply, and now we're looking at branching into the Fusion Pro area to even add more value to the current customer list that we have and to get additional customers that would want to have that value added to their materials as well.
Hey, Skip, I've got a couple questions that have come in for you. We talk about this concept, and you know, what I look at is I deal with printers all the time, and it's an evolution, not a revolution, obviously. When you talk to your customers, how are you going out and articulating the increased value? And I talk about the value and the cost coming together. How are you articulating the value proposition to your customer base?
Depends on who the customer is. If it's a nonprofit, we have a different kind of approach than if it's a for-profit business-to-business approach. Basically, we're looking at trying to have them understand how the value is added with more information that they have in their customer profile. So a lot of them have good customer profiles, for example, how much they donated last year, the year before, this or that, and other areas of interest to them, like coming to some event they're having soon or later. So we're trying to get them to understand the value of getting all those items into the database so that they can be pulled into the areas on, for example, the mailing piece that would be unique to each person who's in the mailer.
Okay. And so that's your approach on the not-for-profit side. So when I talk about the value proposition, do you go back to them and show them how you can increase donations and those kinds of things through personalization?
Yes, that's exactly it. Right. We're trying to show them that through the new tool of a variable data that would say, okay, previously maybe you would just say, dear Mr. and Mrs. Smith instead of dear contributor, and you sprinkle their names throughout the editorial piece. But now you want to go even better than that. Say, now we got a high-value photo we can stick in there that shows some value-added opportunity they may want to participate in.
Okay.
I'm saying on the business-to-business side, what we're looking at doing is identifying with the customer what the markets are they're looking to cover with their product, and then try to find information about the profile of those other people they're trying to reach or companies they're trying to reach to add value through that same venue process, but just in a different way.
Okay. Now, two quick questions that came in for you, Skip. The first one is, you're transitioning your business. So you're going into that, what I'll categorize as moving into a blue ocean by really sitting down and saying, hey, I'm going to add value to the work that I'm doing by personalizing, customizing it. How are you getting your customers to trust you as more of a strategist versus a printer?
Well, that's exactly what we're trying to do. Rollins has been in this spot since 1971, so there's a significant customer loyalty here that's already been developed. Now, we've enhanced that significantly by our world-class customer service and the speed with which we get products out for them. So we're very hopeful, and it's starting to pay off, that they're listening to what we have to say, which is a first step. So now we have to say, okay, now you understand what we're trying to do, and, you know, we've been handling your products before and getting work out for you in a timely manner, in a competitive manner, and now we want to take it to the next step so you can enhance the value that you're giving to your customers and to your people that you're trying to help.
Okay. And then one other quick question. In terms of offset and digital, what percentage of your work is digital today?
That's a very good question. I have not turned on our conventional two-color press, which we used to run four-color on as well in two passes, or our one-color press that we used to run envelopes on since November. We've been all digital here. We've been doing digital envelopes full color on the Zante machine with transfers and magnets, and we've been running the high-quality competitive four-color off the Konica Minolta 8000 press and very good reviews and acceptance by our customers. So we haven't turned on a conventional press since last November.
Okay. What I'm going to do next is I am going to then turn it over to Scott, and I've got some additional questions coming in, but we'll catch those at the back end. So, Scott, I'm going to let you spend a couple minutes talking about Sorrento Mesa and what you're doing in terms of emerging technology.
Thank you, Barbara. Nice to be with you, everybody, today. Hello from sunny San Diego. This is Scott Capel from Sorrento Mesa Printing. And obviously, you see that's our Chamber of Commerce shot, so if you want to come to San Diego for a vacation, we would love to have you. Only, here's a little bit of travel advice when coming to San Diego. Never come in May or June. It's pretty sketchy on the sun, and we have names for those months out there. Here we call them May Gray and June Gloom. So if you want to come to San Diego and want to hang out at the beach, always come after July 1st, and after July 1st, it's clear sailing till November. So I'm going to talk to you a little bit about Sorrento Mesa Printing today. What we've done, two major areas I'm going to talk about is our web-to-print capacity that we've deployed, and also, if I have a little time at the end, we can talk a little bit about some of the social media work that we've done to project and extend the Sorrento Mesa brand. So a little overview on Sorrento Mesa Printing. I founded the company in 1987, and since we've been open, we really have primarily focused exclusively on the corporate B2B space. That's really our market. In fact, 98% of our sales volume these days comes from the business-to-business community. So this is who we target, and this is the kind of accounts we look for. We have a very lean, flat organization, extremely robust IT infrastructure internally, and we also make use of software as a service tools as well. And we have a very high SPE, sales per employee. That's a really critical metric for any printing company and really, really points towards the profitability of the printing company. Companies with high SPEs are usually making some very good money. We have a very flexible, cross-trained staff, and 80% of my staff has been with me for 15 or plus years, so we have a very good team structure here. Everybody kind of can finish everybody else's sentence. It's quite nice. And to talk about the revenue story from the previous question, here's a little interesting how Sorrento Mesa Printing has really kind of flipped the model. In 2005, 100% of our revenue was from offset lithography. Last year, in 2011, we have flipped to now 76% of our revenue comes from digital production. We still do offset, still do a good amount of it, but the digital capabilities really has changed how we do things and has also given us a lot of opportunity. And since we opened, I never hired a salesperson. I like the sales process. I enjoy it, actually. It's fun, and we utilize a lot of tools here to help me in the sales process. So I handle and still do handle all of the outbound sales efforts. Primary focus, top three products for what we do is corporate ID, marketing collateral, and technical documentation. And our top three services are printing, graphics, and fulfillment. And I'm sure this looks much like many of the people on the call today. So we're very much like you. We do kind of the same things in a lot of ways. The top three verticals that we have are the biotech, biomedical space, software, and manufacturing.
Hey, Scott, I got a real quick question for you. How many total people do you employ today?
We have, including myself, we have six people.
Okay.
And so that's something we can address later. These systems that we deploy make us incredibly efficient, and that is really what leads to the high SPE more than anything else. So, again, a lot of people talk about the web-to-print opportunity, and most of the focus, I think, is more on the B2C space, and I'm going to point out Vistaprint as the model that everybody's trying to emulate. We all want to put an online storefront onto the web, and we want everybody to come to our website, and they want to do the procurement, printing and procurement over the web. The focus I'm going to talk about today, the opportunity, is really not to the B2C space. That's really not what we focus on. We focus on the B2B space. And we do that with corporate-branded portals. We build corporate-branded portals for companies to become and basically an extension of their supply chain. These corporate-branded portals, most of the links on these do not exist on the web. They are links that are on the internal intranet of the companies. So most of the stuff is not even seen on the web, but we basically have our access points inside the company's network. These corporate-branded portals eliminate a lot of friction in the transaction process, and they standardize things, everything from quotation to ordering to shipment, billing. It's all very clean, and these systems allow us to be very, very efficient and eliminate tons of friction. And, of course, one of the benefits of these kind of systems is that you have centralized information, so you can start to gather business intelligence on your clients. You can look for patterns, how they do things, how they like things, and that really does help you for account penetration and account retention. Benefits to the client for these systems are usually faster response times, fewer touch points, things happen much easier, much quicker. The whole process streamlines the supply chain. It also offloads responsibility. There are many situations we have at our accounts that internal personnel of the client used to have to handle the responsibility of ordering printing, checking proofing, and dedicated part of their times even to making POs and all that kind of stuff. What we've done is we've freed up personnel within our client organization so that we can take the load off their shoulders, and these systems basically help us free their employees up to do other tasks. And that the clients like that, and it helps them as well. And, of course, these corporate-branded portals do give a consistent repeatable, predictable experience, and that's really important. Benefits to the printer, benefits to us. These systems raise the barrier to entry from the competition. It makes you very, very sticky. And to go back and talk about what Barb was talking about earlier, I mean, you can swim in the red ocean and be on the bid lists and all that kind of stuff, or these corporate branded portals allow you to establish your own blue ocean and swim freely. And by doing that, it just makes your business more profitable, and also the client has a higher level of satisfaction. You also have the opportunity, again, to gather business intelligence with these systems. You can, again, see trends, look for things, figure out ways to improve things. This is one of the big high-value propositions that we have with our clients, is that we see things are being done a certain way. We have good relationships with them. We can call them and talk to them or go see them and say, look, you know, we see you're doing things this way. Have you ever considered doing things that way? And here are some of the reasons why you'd want to do that, and here are some of the benefits. So having these systems gives you that opportunity to gather that intelligence. And, of course, once again, the focus is really on value and not price. Again, Blue Ocean strategies always focus on value, and you become really entrenched with the client's operation.
Hey, Isha, I do have a real quick question for you before you move on. You know, you talked about offset and digital, and you're talking about the portals. And so when I take a look at it, what kind of – can you share the first of all, impression volume, and then the second piece is which impressions are most profitable? Are your digital ones more profitable than your offset ones?
Well, I think it depends. You know, when you talk about digital versus offset production capacity, you're also trying to fill a need and present a solution. So obviously digital color is much more profitable than offset, and that's just kind of why we headed in that direction, and that has really that adds a lot to the bottom line, having those kind of margins. But some of these systems, I mean, if you have a give you an example. One of the clients we do these for is they have a distributed sales force and around the nation, and so what we do is we would print a lot of these materials offset and store them in inventory, and then when the salesperson logs in and selects some of the things that they want, those are offset products that are going out because there's no reason to have a print-on-demand situation for that if the clients have already agreed that they need this much material and collateral over so much time. On the other hand, some of the stuff is print-on-demand, which obviously you need your digital capabilities to do. So it does kind of vary depending on the application. I think a hybrid model seems to work the best for us.
Okay.
And I don't really have an impression count for you. But.
And then Scott, the other question that came in, and you mentioned this concept of SPE, or sales per employee.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess, first of all, the SPE acronym that you've got in your slides is sales per employee, right?
That's correct.
What would be your recommended target if you're in the printing industry for sales per employee?
Well, there's a lot of statistics about that, and it does also depend on the kind of company you are. The smaller companies tend to have a lower SPE. Larger printing companies, 500 and plus employees, tend to have larger SPEs. Mark personal, our SPE is over 200,000 per employee, well over 200,000. I think a good target for that would be 150 to 200, I think, is really what you'd want to go for. If you can get over 200, that would make life really good, and you'd have a lot more profitability, and you could invest in higher-end equipment. But I think a lot of people seem to be around the 130 to 160 range. It seems pretty popular. But I would say a target would be 150 to 200. That's what I would say. And if you can get up that high, then definitely push past 200 if you can do that.
And so the way what you're saying is the way that you're running your business with the client portals is helping you deliver that SPE of greater than 200,000.
It does contribute to that. A lot of also what contributes to the high SPE is digital technology that we have here at Konica Minolta allows us to run some of these machines unattended into the kind of a lights-out environment. And so
okay.
You come in the morning and you have a large volume that ran overnight without any operator attendance. You didn't have an employee's salary to tie to that production capacity. So the digital tools also allow you to boost the SPE as well. I don't think we'd ever have the SPE we have now if we were still 100% offset.
Okay, thanks.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so did I skip? Maybe. Did I get to here? Okay, results. Did I go through this? I can't.
No. No.
Okay. I didn't just skip the slide. So, again, these are the results that you get from that kind of environment. You become an extension of the client's operation, seamless. You de facto become part of their company. And, again, that's where you want to be. That's the catbird seat. That's where you want to be for all of this stuff. And, again, you elevate your relationship. You're no longer perceived as a vendor. You're now a resource or a partner. In fact, I can't stand the V word. If somebody calls me a vendor, I know that I failed to communicate the value proposition because that's a sign that they still think of you as a price determining factor if they're going to do business with you. These systems move you back up to the resource level, which is really where you want to be. And, again, it widens and deepens the relationship. It also leads to other opportunities within the account. An example of that would be, let's say you have a business card ordering portal. So your logo and your brand are seen by everybody in the company. The employees are allowed to order their own cards. That can also make aware other people within the organization of you, who you are, and could also spark some interest and say, you know, these guys do a pretty good job at this. Maybe we should consider doing other work with them because some of these companies are so large it's really difficult to penetrate the entire account. So it does lead to other opportunities. It also expands your geographical reach, which is interesting because years ago all of our printing went into the San Diego market. Now a very good percentage of our printing goes all over the country and in some cases goes out globally because we've been able to expand our influence and also the ability to ship the work ordered through, and again, it depends on the account. But it gives you that capability to service these larger accounts. I mean, it would take twice as many people to do this kind of work with all these larger accounts, so much details to chase down. These systems allow you to do that and make it pretty easy for your staff as well. And, of course, we talked about the SPE. So I can stop there.
I've got a few more questions on the portal. Yeah, I do have a few more questions. What software tools are you using to create your portal?
That's a good question. We use a tool called MyOrderDesk from PagePath Technologies. We have found that platform to be very extensible and extremely robust. And we have looked at other platforms before and just said, you know, we're just going to stay with what we work with. And we have been able to expand it and scale it very seamlessly. So we're very happy with that product. And that, again, is a software as a service. That's not on our servers.
Okay, that was my next question, so you hit it right on. And then how many devices and how many Konica Minolta products do you have in your specific location?
Yeah, we had three. We retired one. We have two now, and we're looking to expand that capability. Probably this year we'll add a third engine back in again. And, of course, we have offset, we have duplicators, and we have a 1420 commercial press.
Okay. And then do you outsource any of your print work, or is everything done in-house?
No, we do as much as we can in-house, but unfortunately with the 1420 format, you are limited to certain products. So we're very fortunate. We have a local printer here in San Diego that is trade-only, has a five-color Komori 29 with a coder. So anything that's a little bit beyond our 1420 capabilities, I can easily outsource to him. We buy the paper, drop it off, and then I do a press check at his facility, and then it's like a nice extension. I would consider them as a resource and a partner and not a vendor as well.
Okay. And you know, one of the things, Scott, in when you start looking at dealing with the marketing budget, how do you pitch your services as a partner, as a strategic partner to get in the door? And given that you're the head sales guy, how do you do that? And how do you convince them to do business with you?
Well, there's this old marketing term. You have 2 ears and 1 mouth. Use them appropriately. And I think a lot of the reason we're able to do these kind of account penetration is just that I use social media to try to do some business intelligence. I'll talk about that in a minute. But really, to get in front of the decision maker, you really just have to ask good questions and then listen. And they'll tell you what the issues are. I think it is all about asking good questions and then knowing when to just be quiet and let them tell you what they're looking for.
But for instance, and I'm going to go through this, if I'm dealing with that issue of marketing supply chain and promotional material, how communicating what the value is of what you're delivering?
I'm sorry, Barbara, I lost some packets there. I lost your lost a couple.
Oh, how do you communicate the value of what you're delivering? We talked a little bit about, you know, the marketing supply chain management. Do you go in and show them how you can save the money, how you can make it more convenient? What's that compelling reason that they would buy one of your portals?
Yeah. The opportunity is always to relieve some sort of pain or some sort of bottleneck. price, I usually don't even get into the conversation because we're really more focused on, you know, what's going on now, what do you like, what do you don't like, what could you change if you could? These are some of the critical questions I ask. And that really is not a price discussion. That is really more about, you know, what can we do to make things easier for you? Tell me, you know, what you would like in your ideal situation. And most of the time when I get into an account and have an opportunity to meet somebody, it's always because there is a problem. Frankly, in the sales process, if I talk to somebody who's really happy with their resource, I don't waste any more time on that because in San Diego, it's such a large market. There are, you know, there are prospects everywhere. I tend to focus my time on where I can help, if that makes any sense.
Sure. And then one other quick question. How do you connect my order desk with your MIS system for billing and those types of things?
Well, we use print management software here, and actually at this time we don't have a direct connection with that. So we really use the my order desk as an entry point for the request and for the order to come in. And then we actually have staff put that into the print management system. And again, I have CRM here. I use Goldmine for my contact management software. I have Printer's Plan for soft use for my print management software, and, of course, I use my order desk. And I've never really been able to tie all those together, and I'm not sure that is really all for me, for my size company. I'm not sure that's all that important. As long as we have the tools, it's almost like the best tool for the job situation. And I haven't found anything that I could really afford at my level that has a fully integrated solution. So we just decide that we just, you know, any kind of gaps in the data, we just do, you know, transfer it over. It isn't really, we don't lose that much energy in that process.
Okay. And I'm going to ask one last question of you, Scott, and then I'll let you get into your social media discussion. But are you doing any work with large format signage, or have you looked at it?
We have a large format here. That marketplace in San Diego is very competitively priced, and I personally have had a problem with the value add on that to be able to have higher margins on their work. So we actually have a 44-inch Epson proofer that we actually use as a proofing. We have a full computer plate, metal screen plate setter, and we use that proofer for proofs. And we do the wide format on the side, but it's only aqueous-based, and I don't have any plans right now to expand into solvent-based signage work.
Okay.
It is an opportunity, but I just can only do so many things, so we decided not to go there.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Okay, so let's just touch on social media just for a second. I know social media is kind of like a worn-out thing at these times. I mean, you know, probably people are really tired of hearing about social media, but just want to share a few things that might be helpful. I look at social media not as a profit center. I know there's some people out there that want to try to make social media a profit center. But for me, for my clients, most of them have large marketing departments, and they handle their own social media just fine without my help. There is opportunity for social media support in smaller companies. Definitely a profit center, but it's not really our focus. What we've done with social media is we've actually used it for brand propagation and trying to get a brand identity in the marketplace, using social media as just more marketing channels. So in the B2B space, LinkedIn is my primary network. I have a very, very large LinkedIn network. And anybody on this call, if you'd like to join me on LinkedIn, I'll have a link at the end, or you could just look for my name or company. We use two things for LinkedIn. I have a personal LinkedIn page, and also Serrano Mesa Printing has a company page in LinkedIn. And that's another opportunity that I see a lot of printers not fulfilling, is to be able to generate a company page within LinkedIn. And our company page on LinkedIn actually has a lot of detail and also has links to our website. So if you look at the product page on the Serrano Mesa LinkedIn page, you click a link for learn more, and it'll actually take you internally to the Serrano Mesa Printing internal website page describing that product. So, and then also there's a LinkedIn widget on that page inside the website, so it's basically a two-way relationship between the LinkedIn company page and the Serrano Mesa website page. So again, LinkedIn, we could talk for an hour on that alone, but use it as a business intelligence tool more than a networking tool. It allows me to look at companies, get some granularity, figure out who I know there or who knows somebody that I want to meet there, and that's how I use LinkedIn to help me in my sales process. And, of course, Facebook. Everybody's on Facebook these days, and Facebook has really been coined as more of a B2C focus. The thing I like about Facebook is that it allows you to have a much more depth pictures, your facility, your people. There's a way to make a little bit more human connection with your operation. And so we use Facebook also to, put up really, really, really good relevant content. And I think that's the key. I think if you use your social media channels to just tell people your special of the month or your discount, this printing, that's really, it's just a shame. It's not an effective way to use social media. You want to use social media to help people identify with your brand, what you have to offer. And, again, use it in a sales process. It's really, really helpful. We use Twitter very rarely. Actually, let me just go here real quick. And I just want to talk about the website for a second. The website is the hub. That's the focus of your brand. And all of your social media channels should be facing and funneling to your website. Your website is your property, first of all. You don't have terms and conditions from Facebook or terms and conditions from Twitter because those are all walled gardens, and you have to follow their rules, their way. Your website still is out there free to do what you want to do with it. So if you can generate interest and buzz on your social media channels and focus them back to your website, you can tell your story the best on your website, and you have the most freedom and flexibility to do that. So some strategies here, again, for us. The main focus of social media is to project the Sorrento Mesa brand. Share relevant content often, and the key operational word on that is relevant. Try to find really good content. And I'm not a big fan of subscribing to services that help push social media content out because I think it's just too generic. You want to find content that you think would help you, first of all. And you want to share that content with either your fans or people you're on LinkedIn with. And we have this way we do the posting. You know, there's tools like Hootsuite and that stuff, but I'll just show you, let me back up real quick. On the website, if you look down at the bottom, on the right-hand side, there's a Twitter widget. And so the way we do it is I post to the Facebook page, which automatically, because Facebook allows you to do this, rebroadcasts to the Twitter stream. And then because I have a Twitter widget on the front page of SorrentoMesa.com, it rebroadcasts that same post to the front page of the website. So with one stroke, you can put it in three different places. Similarly, if you post on LinkedIn, you have the ability to rebroadcast it to Twitter. And then again, once it goes to Twitter, it again comes to the front page of the website. So you have a couple different ways to do things. I use Twitter more as an RSS feed out as opposed to a place that I create content because, you know, you only have so much time, and I find that focusing on the other networks are more helpful to me. And again, the primary goal is to support the sales process and all of this. It's much easier if you have lots of testimonials on your LinkedIn page and you're meeting somebody for the first time. You know, a lot of times what you try to do as a salesperson is you're trying to establish credibility and rapport. That's a lot easier if you can just say, you know, if you have a moment after the meeting, jump over onto LinkedIn and take a look at what other people have said about me and my company. And there is no better testimony, there is no better golden value in the sales process than testimonials. Only this time you have testimonials for the world to see. And so that can generate tremendous credibility very, very early on in the sales process. And so you don't have to spend your time trying to establish your credibility with the prospect. You really can spend more time listening to what their problems are and figuring out how you can help you. And again, all of these things generate credibility and to rise you to the golden holy grail of trusted advisor status. And that's where we all want to be in the sales process. We don't want to be looked at as a printing salesperson. We want to be looked at as a trusted advisor, somebody that somebody can confide in their business strategies, where they want to take their company, how are we going to get there. You know, that you're not a vendor anymore when you're having those kind of conversations.
Well, Scott, I got a couple quick questions for you, and then I've got a couple more for Skip. First of all, first question is, on average, how many orders are you receiving a day through your web portals?
Every day.
But how many web orders do you receive a day?
It depends on the clients. Sometimes it could be as few as 2 or 3. Sometimes it could be 10 or 15. Or sometimes.
Okay.
And again, a lot of these can be business card orders, variable data business card orders that come through streaming through. But, yeah, I mean, it can get pretty big sometimes.
Okay. The second quick question for you is who are you using as a website provider? You know, did you create the website yourself? Or do you have somebody that did that work for you?
No, that's a good question. We actually, the website is hosted by websiteforprinters.com. It's Mike Stevens' organization. We created the content and bought the skin off of ThemeForest, which is an excellent source for pre-done websites. I mean, there's so many great designs out there. It's kind of crazy to even pay a designer these days to develop a website for you when you can have a beautiful skin for $25 or $30. And then we took that skin and integrated it into Mike's system, and he hosts it, and we plugged all of his back-end functionality that he offers with his product into our website.
And again, what's the name of the provider that you use? Somebody didn't catch it in terms of the website provider.
a website for printers.
Website for printers, okay.
Yes, .com.
And then two other real quick questions, and then I've got one for Skip. I'll do these because they're kind of sequenced. What size companies are you targeting for your portals?
Well, you know, that's a good question. It really, we look at a minimum size of about 250 people, employees, and our largest one is over 5,000. So, mm-hmm. I mean, there's a lot of work that has to go into build these portals. We like to see we like to see it. It's worth it. Sometimes, you know, a portal can actually get in the way and make it more difficult. If you try to build a portal for a company that's 50 employees, that's not effective for you. It's not effective for them. You know, it just makes it too much baggage. You want to be able to build these systems so that you can streamline and project. Best scenario for these kind of clients are usually accounts that are in multiple cities, because that allows you to, not a lot of companies without these kind of systems can handle that kind of work by hand. And so the portals, I like to see 250 plus. And if we take it, we could take it all the way up to 50,000 employees if we want. It's all
okay.
Fully scalable.
And one more question before I ask one of Skip here, which is, you mentioned where you buy the skin for your website, and
mm-hmm.
I had two people that came back and said they didn't catch the name.
Yes, it's themeforest.com, T-H-E-M-E-F-O-R, I think it's one R, E-S-T. So like
okay.
themeforest.com. And
okay.
It's quite a good source. It's a very, very, very rich place, and there's lots of good content out there you can purchase.
Okay.
Thousands
and
thousands.
Then the next big question that I have is one for Skip. And Skip, the question that I've got is, what percentage of your work is in fact actually variable data work today, and where do you see that going?
Oh, I would estimate it at probably less than 1.5%. But the focus on this is really to get our customers and prospects thinking in that direction and understanding the value it could bring them. And that's what we're
okay.
spending most of the time on right now. But I see it over time growing to 25, 30, 40% in the next year and a half or 2 years.
Okay, terrific. And Scott, same question for you. What percentage of your work is variable data that comes in over the portals?
None. Oh, well, I say that. I'm sorry. Back up. All of the business card orders we have come in as variable data. So technically that is, I would say, of all the business cards that we print here, which is quite a large amount because I like business cards because usually they're the key to an account, not only because you can see who is who within the organization. I'd say probably about 60 to 70% of the business cards that we print come through the variable data portals.
Okay, great. And then one quick last question. Somebody really would like to get the name of the skin company. Could you repeat that one last time and spell it again?
It's Theme Forest, like T-H-E-M-E. And then forest, like a tree's forest, forest.com.
Okay.
And they it's part of the Envato family, Envato. And Envato also has music snippets and video snippets and all kinds of great. There's just a ton of content out there to be able to do all this.
And then one more quick question, which is, how do you cut the business cards?
We cut them on a standard 30-inch polar cutter. We don't believe in the slitter. Some of these cards have to be exactly very, very precise. These are corporate-branded cards. Logos have to be in exactly the same position. We count everything on a guillotine cutter.
Okay. And so I'm going to wrap up with just a couple of quick recommendations and conclusions. And the first one is that, well, Skip and Scott are at very different levels in terms of the value chain. They are redefining their value innovation, and that's an absolutely critical principle in the Blue Ocean strategy. And it might be helping your customers cut costs by reducing document obsolescence, by reducing marketing costs and making that marketing more effective. It could be inventory reduction, which is some of what Scott's doing with his web portal. Or it could be increasing buyer value, and that means time to market, return on marketing investment, customer reach, managing content, brand integrity, ease of use. But whatever it is, you really need to take the time to define that value innovation. And what you want to do then is you're going to reconstruct the boundaries for your business, and you want to leave that bloody red ocean behind and you don't want to be swimming with those sharks anymore. And what you want to be able to do is enter that blue ocean. Now, I'm going to just check here. I think I've got one or two more quick questions. The first one is, I'm going to start with Skip. Skip, what model of Konica Minolta do you have?
We have the BizHub Press 8000.
And same question for you, Scott. What model do you have?
We have two 6500s driven by Creos, and we probably will most likely purchase an 8000 or two 8000s in the near future.
Okay, terrific.
Ours is driven by the external fiery, by the way.
Okay, great. And then the other quick question I have, if you look at value innovation, but everybody cares about impressions, is how many clicks are you running on your 8000s or your 8000 Skip? And same question, how many impressions a month are you doing, Scott? And I'll start with Skip.
Well, we've had the 8000 since November, and our full color click is up to about 190,000 right now.
Okay, terrific. And Scott, same question for you.
Are you defining those clicks as 8.5 by 11 equivalents?
Whatever you want to define.
Yeah, 8.5 equivalents. We load balance between the two machines because they talk to each other, which is also a nice benefit of having the Creos talk to each other. So you could load balance between the machines. We will run anywhere between 75 and 350,000 impressions a month, color.
Okay, great. Scott and Skip, again, I'd like to thank you both for joining us today. And, you know, while we're all at different levels of value innovation, what I would encourage everybody to do is to take a look at how they're helping their customers and what level of value innovation you're going to need to deliver so that you really aren't swimming in that sea of sharks and you move into the blue ocean. Thanks, everybody. Have a great rest of the day. And if we didn't get to your question, I'll see if we can get through. We've got your email addresses, and we'll respond to you. And, again, thanks to Konica Minolta for sponsoring this webinar.